Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Michael Cole said to use jazz as the bread.
Come on to the rock show. Come on to the people's show. Come on to the premiere show. SmackDown.
It is the 29th of June, the year of our Lord 2000. Black Legend, You See the Trouble With Me, is still number one in the UK charts. I'm sick of talking about that, so I'll also bring up the fact that Eminem's The Marshall Mathers LP is the number one album in the UK. A lovely little album, we'll continuously come back. Lots of happy moments on that one. Gladiator is number one in the UK box office for the last time, thanks to the Kurt Angle push. Marvel vs. Capcom 2 is released on the Dreamcast, and my God, did that rule. Probably the best version of that game for the very brief home release that it got.
Gonna take you for a ride.
It is announced that Lisa Riley will leave her role as Emmerdale's Mandy Dingle in the autumn. The end
no!
of an era. And crazily enough, Nintendo's, see if I get this right, Satellaview system ceases to receive broadcasts.
No!
Yes. Yes, in Japan, that'd still be going. I'm not saying that they'd be using it to watch episodes of Emmerdale, but let's pretend that they were.
So Teleview was, this was the NES that had internet access?
Kind of, yeah. It was the SNES that had some sort of like, all right, on Friday you're going to get an update. So if you've got this plugged in to the phone line and your mum's not on the phone to a mate past 6 p.m. because it's cheaper that way, you will get this update.
I love that so much.
I had no idea it was still going in the year 2000.
I love that so much. I would have,
oh, absolutely. Very
I love
fascinating
a
little
Super
thing.
Nintendo with internet access. Like, that's just so cool.
Yeah. And even crazy enough, the fact that there are ROM dumps of that online mean that people kept their carts of that on and have loaded them onto the internet. Nintendo haven't released them and gone, do what you want with these. They're definitely not into that type of habit. But the fact that people have kept that for so many years and then released them online so people can play what these little mods were is amazing to me. It shows how cool fans are. When it comes to old school things, wow, rather like this very podcast, the Cultaholic Classic SmackDown Review, starring myself, Mafu, and his lovely friend, Mr. Tom Campbell. How the hell are you, pal?
Mate, I'm all right. I'm all right. As we speak, it is a Monday afternoon here in the United Kingdom. I'm looking out on the River Tyne. I have done, let me just a quick check, 14,000 steps today, which I'm very proud about. Just my plan was to be a stone lighter by the time we came out of lockdown two, lockdown harder. But I think I'm about £6 adrift of that, which is fine. Like, I did have a weekend where I decided I'm just going to eat all the food. So it's fine. But either way, it's nice to be coming out of lockdown in somewhat something vaguely shaped, if you know what I mean. But we're doing all right over here. More importantly, how are you, Matthew Gregg?
I'm good. I was just concentrating on being mentally sound during You're lockdown right. too. I think I'm also £6 away from my goal. It's fine. It's fine. As I'm saying, I'm not in the best of moods, but it's for completely normal reasons. Could it be that I'm sick of Not being able to see my friends and family? Of course it is. You know, am I sick of talking to my wall? Yes, and the wall is sick of talking to me. So
I'm
it's
very
fine.
Proud of my dad, who managed to find a very Campbell solution to his favourite pub being shut, in a sense that he has built a pub in the garden. He gave me a tour of it last night. It's a it's a shed which has been repurposed as a with a bar and a pourer and everything. It's amazing. My dad has built a pub in his garden to get around. Somehow, though, according to my mum, he's still half an hour late home every night. I don't know how that happens when it's in your garden. That's a very my dad way of solving the pub being closed crisis.
I'm very intrigued by the solution. I mean, it's one of those let the mountain come to Muhammad situations.
It truly is. It truly is. I've bought him a... He doesn't listen to the SmackDown podcast anymore. He's more of a classic Raw guy.
I don't like your dad.
He's great. I bought him a hanging pub sign for Christmas. That's my main gift for him. So I've been with like a custom pub sign that he can stick outside, naming the place the Captain's Lodge, which I'm very excited about.
That's good. What someone hanged a pub? What did they do?
they were drinking on the job.
But
hey. So we are here back in the year 2000, Matthew Gregg. We've got, do you know what? Quite a significant episode of SmackDown to talk about.
Oh, don't we just?
Jeez! Like, as the episode was rolling on, I was frantically making notes about multiple big things that were occurring in this one. And Matthew, are you going to walk us and talk us through it in a couple of minutes' time?
Of course I am. I'd like to remind people who are watching this chronologically that this is the episode of SmackDown after King of the Ring 2000, which I believe me, you, and a little lad named Andrew got together to do a watch-along of, which is also available where all good podcasts are sold. But to give you up to speed, Shane McMahon got put through a table via a cool-looking chokeslam, thanks to The Undertaker. The Rock won back the world title from Vince McMahon in a six-man tag where he didn't have to pin Triple H, the champion, to win it back. And Kurt Angle is the new King of the Ring. But more importantly, little Andrew was well aware of wrestling history. The first King of the Ring in 1993 was Jeff Hardy.
Yes, he was. We've changed history for Andrew.
Teddy Long was the manager of Rodney Mack, and he didn't know who Chris Benoit was. My new favourite character, now that Owen the Bastard, it's kind of one of those bad faces you see in wrestling where you're supposed to cheer him, but you just don't want to.
So Matthew's going to talk us through SmackDown for this week in just a moment. Bit of show admin before we go any further. FYI, next week is the final episode of the Cultaholic Classic SmackDown review of 2020. Next week's the last week we'll do. We'll then take a couple of weeks off for Crimbus, and then we'll be back in January. But you will have something in your ears featuring Matthew Gregg and myself to keep you entertained whilst the SmackDown podcast is off for Christmas. And I will reveal what that is. How is this for cross-promotion? I will reveal what that is this Saturday on the Cultaholic Classic Raw Review. So find out what that is this Saturday on the Raw Review. Fun factoid. Yes, I feel the excitement bubbling from that end of the internet.
That's right. To find out what's happening, you'll have to dial 1-900-909-9900.
The Mean Gene hotline will help you with who's dead. Right, before we get into SmackDown this week, just a few notes from the wrestling world in this particular week. In the New York Times, following the lawsuit victory, Viacom chairman Sumner Redstone proclaimed a much more important victory than most people will know with regards to the WWF and their back and forth regarding TV rights. So, saying that the victory for Viacom in the courts will benefit TNN and will up the profile of the station. So WWF is on the move to Viacom, is on the move to TNN. This is an exciting time for WWF. Lots of money about to be made. USA Network, who were... This whole thing came about because the USA Network said, we want first dibs on all your new programs, you bellends. Because WWF are courting TNN, Viacom, MTV for new wrestling shows without approaching USA first. And USA got their knickers in a twist about this, proverbially. And this led to a court case. And consequently, WWF is on the move, Monday Night Raw on the move in particular to TNN. And Sunday Night Heat being picked up by MTV. USA Network tried to downplay the loss of World Wrestling Federation programming. President Stephen Chow quoted as saying the loss of WWF shows will have a negligible effect on our ratings and a positive effect on our profits. During the trial itself, however, they stated that wrestling was very profitable and the crown jewel of the schedule. So which one is it then, lads? Judge William Chandler, who oversaw the case of WWF versus the USA Network and Viacom, ruled that the USA failed to match the Viacom offer because it didn't match the promises to offer equal promotion of the product on radio and billboards, nor did it agree to preempt the wrestling shows. This has always been an issue with the dog show going back to the 90s. Chandler also ruled that the USA Network did not have an obligation to match the package as it pertained to book deals, broadcasting XFL football, or airing non-wrestling programming, and helping fund non-wrestling programming produced by WWFE. So WWF is on the move. This didn't mean much to us in the UK, Math, because Sky Sports has been the partner on television in the UK with the WWF up until this year, and all goes back to the 80s. But this was a big thing in America, wasn't it?
It seems to be, yes. However, it seems to be like, oh no, Raw's moved. Oh, there he goes. It's on that channel. And the only thing I remember about this reading when I've done my podcast listening to, when I'm doing my walking cardio, was a one-off comment that Jim Ross made about one of the shows where he said, he did an impression of Vince McMahon saying, I want to get away from that damn dog show. And then quickly pointed out, no, I'm joking. And the fact that he stressed enough that he didn't really say that, I'm just joking about him, makes me believe that Vince McMahon once said that for real.
Of course Vince wants to get away from the dog show. Like, anything that is a threat to Monday Night Raw and WWF, he wasn't want any part of. And the dog show was a threat. And it's so funny when you talk about it even now, how that this monolith, this monster of a wrestling promotion, this conglomerate machine was just, would heel and beg at the whims of the Westminster Dog Show. Raw always getting preempted because people just like to look at dogs on the USA Network. And part of the deal, I genuinely believe, and as that little gag from Pritchard has alluded to as well, I think a big part of it was Vince didn't like the dog show. And imagine that. Imagine losing multi-million dollars worth of production because you chose dogs over wrestling.
In fairness, I've seen some of those episodes of Raw 95. Yeah, I'd rather see some Shih Tzus. it couldn't have been good as well, Tom, for the people who worked at the USA Network, having to deal with both Vince McMahon and the Westminster people. The Westminster people knocking on the door and going, where's my preempted? And going, you've had your preempted. You call that a preempting? Where's my preempting? Because no, you're going to have one next month. And throwing bins at, executives. It's all very horrible. What else was happening in the world of wrestling, Tom?
This week, WWF officials are meeting with NCAA heavyweight champion Brock Lesnar. Lesnar signing for the company seems inevitable. More on this next week.
I don't know why you spend so much time filling up the news section with just crap that had no effect on anything, Tom.
It does seem like filler. I do apologise. I'll give you something meaty.
Oh,
there
good.
Is talk in WCW of Stevie Ray becoming a colour commentator.
Oh,
which,
yes,
to quote Dave Meltzer, sounds hilarious on the surface. Ray does have a good smart-ass critical demeanour backstage that doesn't come through whilst doing his interviews. But it sounds like a long shot. It may not happen. Stevie Ray behind the commentary desk, Matt. Are you excited?
Absolutely. Fond memories of Stevie Ray commentating. As a backstage interview, it was terrible. You don't really want a backstage interviewer, that dwarfs the talent. I know the other side of the scale is you get the backstage people like the Tom Phillipses having to, spread their legs, so to speak, so that the wrestlers seem huge. But, you know, Stevie Ray's, you know, how are you going to win the title? It's like, I'm really confident. Well, I was until you stood next to me.
until your shadow engulfed me.
Yeah. But, yeah, him commenting, I still remember some of the stuff he used to say. Wow, tonight it's on like neck bone. I think he did the old Dusty Rhodes Clubber, and what else did he do? The little Stevie Ray bit.
He just rambled a lot, I seem to recall.
I think he had a great way of speaking. He's very funny. You know, some people just have this natural confidence and it comes across in their delivery. Kevin Nash is another one of them, but Stevie Ray just... I love listening to him. I'm cracking up just remembering how good he was. And at one time, somebody said something incorrect. It must have been Scott Hudson or somebody on Thunder. Scott Hudson got like the name of the city wrong and he went, oh, it's okay. It's okay. There's only about like a million people watching. Completely undersold the amount of people that were actually watching WCW at that point. Even in 2000, even the B show. There's only like a million people watching. It's like...
Oh. God bless the man that truly brought Slapjack to our television
screen. Oh, yeah. It was an item and his finisher. Because even WCW weren't going to...
What if the Slapjack...
Oh, no, I knew it. I could see you.
I could see you thinking. You could see the cogs turning.
The vibrations on the microphone. Like, oh, God.
What if Slapjack in Retribution is Stevie Ray's Slapjack that's become sentient?
Well, like it went abracadabra alakazam.
I don't know why, but I'm thinking of like the broom in Wizardora. They're Slapjack.
Years later, people will study the effects of lockdown on the human psyche using this very podcast.
I think I've been pretty consistent.
I'll tell you though, Tom, you do have something there. If they do a thing like at the Raw 1000th episode where they had Mae Young and Mark Henry's kid show up, hi Dad, and there's a giant glove. And they have Stevie Ray backstage, he's like, what? And he's like, it's Slapjack.
And Slapjack goes, Father?
And yeah, Stevie Ray looks at the camera and goes, can I get my fruit booty out of here? That was the only thing he'd say, fruit booties.
John.
I'm off like neck bone, and he runs away.
John, can we have Stevie Ray swinging Slapjack?
Oh, yeah, that's all right.
That one's fine. That one's fine.
Or just a Slapjack with Slapjack's mask on it.
Even better. Even better.
God.
End of an era.
I hope other people, if they want to tweet about this episode, just to interrupt. I hope if other people, can they please give their opinions on Stevie Ray's commentary if they remember it?
Yes, please. scores out of five dogs. Thank you. End of an era. WCW Saturday Night is no more. It's being swapped for WCW Saturday Morning. This was once the feature show of WCW. Some of the biggest moments in WCW history went down on that soundstage as part of WCW Saturday Night, the debut of Randy Savage, the first steps of Hulkamania in WCW, the debut of Giant Haystacks coming, which is a key moment in WCW. I'm coming for you, Hulk Hogan! Oh, man. What a day. Look that up. And it's now becoming a highlight show on a Saturday morning. This is to give you some significance.
Oh, that'll kill 10 minutes.
I know, right? Imagine if Monday Night Raw eventually got swapped out for something else and then Raw just became like a one-hour highlight show on a Saturday morning. Like, Saturday Night was WCW's flagship show before Nitro came along. So it was a big thing. Mind you, actually, I'm being thick here. It's kind of already happened because before Monday Night Raw, you had WWF Superstars as the feature show. And lo and behold, when Monday Night Raw took over, Superstars became that highlight show mixed in with a couple of matches. Kind of what main event is now.
Yes, you are right. But True, but I think that's just more of the different style of show and timing, everything else like that. It's obviously a very different audience and everything. But I'll never mind that. Go back to that. People still bring up the fact that WWE don't do it as much as they used to, but they did for the longest time in recent memory go along about how Raw was the longest running weekly episodic non-Emmerdale show and blah and all this stuff. They're the incredibly niche thing. And then a lot of people, elderly people, would point out, what? Not only is this a ridiculously niche thing for you to bring up, but no, WCW Saturday Night went all the way back to Georgia Championship Wrestling in the 70s.
Mm.
And that was on the air combined. If people want to believe, what's the word I'm looking for here? If you go from the chronological order of that all the way up to WCW Saturday Night in 2000, that was 29 years it was on the air. So no.
It's more of a big deal than I made it out to be.
I realize in a few years' time, WWE Raw will have that beaten if we survive through this year or next year. But people would, it became so inconsequential over the years that you're right. The fact that you almost jokingly said, "Oh, Randy Savage, this happened, giant haystacks," you know, and that's what it became to people. There was absolutely no prominence. It was towards WCW was having all these different shows from Saturday Night. Prime, Main Event, Worldwide, and all those ones. There wasn't really one that was. There was Saturday Night and really had that much compared to Raw, which has always been the A show since it started. So you're right. It's almost like people look at it like this D or E show at WCW when it really wasn't. But again, that's just one of the big differences between WWE and the companies that aren't around anymore. And I fear I am rambling, so I will stop talking. I would rather talk about the fact that Giant Haystacks, I did not know this, one of the segments he made his debut in on Nitro, and I haven't seen this, but someone brought it up. Mean Gene went up to him and said a line about, because he's British and he has bad teeth, his mouth looked like the entrance to a cemetery.
Yeah, I remember that line.
Like, this is supposed to be the next big, really mean deal to Hulk Hogan, and Mean Gene is insulting him.
That was a very Mean Gene thing to do. Just going into business for himself. He didn't start particularly well. He didn't end particularly well either. Other bit of WCW news. So we've had Stevie Ray on commentary, random. WCW Saturday Night is coming to an end, Saturday morning, okay. On the plus side, the Great Muta is coming to WCW.
Oh, God.
He'll debut on the 10th of July. He hasn't started yet because he was busy trying to find an apartment in Atlanta. So Muta's been out house hunting, and he'll be here soon. The Muta run in WCW is something to behold. Like, one of the most iconic professional wrestlers on the planet had this run in WCW where just felt like you brought in a mid-carder.
At that point, Muta is a few months away from completely reinventing himself and sustaining him for the next 20 years. Between the early to mid-90s to now, Muta had a really bad ability to completely half-ass it when he wanted to. And Muta in Japan would just have this same old match every time. He'd do his shtick. And sometimes you're like, yay. And sometimes you're like, he's doing this because you can't be arsed, aren't you? this is your version of doing the Master Lock challenge. So apparently, after sustaining a knee injury in early 2000, Muta took a hiatus from New Japan and returned to WCW to team with Vampiro. Due to the bad booking and decline of WCW in its last years, however, Muta could not recapture the previous popularity he had in the late 80s and 90s. He returned to television on Thunder to team with the Young Dragons against Three Count and Tank Abbott. And we can stop reading there.
Ironically, his tag team partner was doing something far more history-making, as it was added to the Bash at the Beach pay-per-view lineup. Already, this was a match that was on the cards for that. Vampiro facing the Demon in a graveyard match. 20 years
it
before the Boneyard match.
It was a graveyard smash.
It was a graveyard smash. 20 years ahead of the Boneyard. Fun fact.
Well, ahead is a strong term there, Tom. Yeah, they surely were. Like, hey, Vampiro, we've got an idea for you. A bit different bit of direction. What is that? You're the Undertaker. Oh. Okay.
Anything else?
Yeah, lots of weird crap. Yeah, is that you're done speaking? So yeah, you're the Undertaker. You're going to have graveyard matches. You're going to set people on fire. Oh, so you're Kane as well, I guess. You can wrestle Muto.
Jeez.
Oh, God. They tried, I guess, and it is still talked about, but bloody hell.
They certainly did. They certainly did.
And that's all I have to say, yes. Have you seen the match in itself?
I have. It's a treat. It's imagine Boneyard match with no production value and terrible lighting. And WWE gets it in the neck for the way it overproduced the Boneyard match. But the alternative is much worse.
You're right, though, Tom. What if they'd done it like WWE? And because it's the demon, it's like the demon, I'll see you at the Carnival of Horrors. You know, and they get there and you hear this riff, and then all of a sudden the demon comes out of a burning barn. It's, I was late for loving you, baby. And they're doing headlocks.
10 stars. 10 stars.
Yeah, you know what?
Especially if he comes out of a burning barn and goes straight into a headlock. Straight into a headlock.
Cutting the band, straight into cuts back. It's another chin lock. I'm effed.
Before we head over to Matthew for the rundown of SmackDown, a few notes from this particular taping of SmackDown that I have here from Hartford, Connecticut. We had a dark match, Steve Bradley and Scott Vick beating the Dups. Those Dups are still ticking over, Math. They're on their way. Maybe, probably not.
Honestly, next week, I promise you, they'll be on TV, honest. That's the voice of Finn Martin from this episode of Power Slam.
Few bits from Sunday Night Heat for you. Too Cool beating Taker and Funaki. We also had they shook hands and danced at the end. It's all pals at the palace. Dean Malenko came out with two women and said he's beaten all the light heavyweights. He challenged anyone in the back that he hadn't beaten. This led to a match against Jacqueline, in which Malenko made Jacqueline tap out. And in an elimination match, we had TNA and Trish Stratus beating the Hardys and Lita. And Satin pinned Gangrel following an elbow drop. Gangrel has a new shirt. The match got no reaction. Also, debut of a new tag team alert. Check this out, Matthew. D'Lo Brown is back on the books.
And oh, no.
He has a new tag team. Do you know who his new best friend is?
It's Chaz.
It's Chaz! Chaz Warrington and D'Lo Brown, who, according to Dave Meltzer, dressed like the Baldies in ECW, beat Joey Abs and Rodney Mack. So they are now mega friends. We also had a brief little segment where The Rock came out and introduced Wycliffe Jean, who is on the front row. He plugs the video on MTV. We don't see that on television. That's just for the live crowd, you lucky devils.
That sounds like an amazing episode of Sunday Night Heat, I'm not going to lie.
It's a belter.
Gangrel has a new shirt.
That is jeebus.
Yeah. Almost as much noteworthy things as is going to happen in this episode of SmackDown. I'll say this before I do the fabulous dramatic video recap. There's a lot going on there during this bit, and I think especially we talk about them when they pop up again in the episode. All this will take forever. So, in dramatic recap fashion. Raw, the night after King of the Ring, Shawn Michaels shows up to make Mick Foley the brand new commissioner of the WWF. Then Foley points out that Linda McMahon made Foley the commissioner. I guess HBK's there for a royalty check. Triple H wants to be the number one contender, but King Kurt, with the crown, points out that he won King of the Ring, so he should be the number one contender to The Rock's WWF title. So Foley makes Triple H versus Kurt versus The Rock, with the winner getting The Rock on SmackDown. Jericho interferes and costs Triple H the match, with The Rock pinning Kurt Angle. So Rock takes on The Rock tonight, I guess. And before we get the proper intro, we get the SmackDown debut of Mick Foley's wacky commissioner room. He's got a plant, a cactus, like Jack, A picture of some guy on the wall. I don't know who that was. Do you know who that was, Tom?
No, can't say it rings any bells.
No, fair enough. a red phone, like in Batman with Adam West, and a newly shaved head. And anyway, Triple H wants Jericho tonight, and Foley says, well, he'll do the right thing. And then does the dude love dance with the hands on the legs. And I guess we can all dance like that, Tom, when the song goes, widdy wee, widdy woo, widdy wee, widdy woo. We're in Hartford, Connecticut, and we start with Latino Heat and Rikishi teaming up against Chris Benoit and Val Venus. The crowd pop for Eddie Guerrero is very impressive at the start, and turns out on Raw, it was Trish Stratus and Val versus Eddie Guerrero and Chyna, and you'll never believe this, but yes, Chyna looked good and powerbombed Trish. You can tell Trish is a rookie still. She's getting beaten up all over the place. Rikishi hates Venus and Benoit. Eddie had maybe the match of the night against Venus at King of the Ring. Benoit hates Rikishi, and Val Venus hates liberals. And the match is very solid, but loses all heat, even with Val Venus busting out the Blue Thunder Bomb. The crowd doesn't pop for anything, and at one point I was sure that they may have actually edited the audio and replaced it with a fake one. We'll see how we go. Maybe they were chanting WWF. WWF. The name of this company will forever be WWF.
Definitely.
Before I go on, did you notice anything with the audio?
No more than normal. Like, SmackDown does have that sort of heat machine vibe about it all the time. There's a few times where you just have to have a passing glance to the live crowd to get a vibe as to whether or not like they really care. Because when you hear and everybody sat on their asses, like, you don't buy it. There's a few times where I've gone, there's a natural pop here. Like, anytime The Rock walks out, breathes, like, opens his eyes, that works. Too cool, getting some really nice natural pops. Not so much Rikishi on his own, but certainly Too Cooler, I've noticed. But then a lot of stuff I feel like is heat machine based. No, so it didn't stand out. This didn't stand out to me any more than it normally does.
That's fair enough. Rikishi gets the cold tag, and the crowd pops for the giant Samoan drops and corners of ass. TNA show up to help Trish's stable of TAV, or VAT, we didn't really just figure out that last time, did we? But they can only hold on to Chyna outside the ring. So Too Cool run in to even the odds by taking out Benoit and Venus for the DQ, which seems a bit harsh as they weren't doing anything wrong. And then Chyna is able to sort out TNA by herself, because it's only TNA, and then Too Cool dance with Eddie and Chyna. Very weird ending. Maybe someone missed a cue, looking at you, Chyna. And as they're dancing, Michael Cole says, wow, this is like WWF New York for the Lugs. Not very convincing side plug of the week.
Has Eddie cut his mullet?
I think he had this cut at King of the Ring. Oh my!
I may not have spotted it at King of the Ring then. Yeah. I just noticed his cut looked quite fresh here in this particular match.
I'm sure he'd appreciate that comment.
I hope he would. But it was, as you say, a bit of a weird bit with the ending. Felt like Chyna did miss a step, but it was a strong enough opener. I think it shows you how rich the mid card is at this point in WWF, and it goes without saying that this is a great year for WWF. But certainly the mid card is the fullest it's ever been. Not just with bodies, but with bodies doing stuff. Like in this one match, you've got Eddie Guerrero, who is very much seen as European champion. You've got Rikishi there, intercontinental champion, who's been mixing it up with some beefy names. Val Venus is there as well. And like him and Rikishi going back and forth. Benoit, who isn't the IC champion at the moment, but will no doubt be back there again. And this is just like a taste of a couple of the people in the mid-card at this point. And the roster is just second to none right now. Really is.
You know what, Tom? You're not wrong.
I'm not wrong.
Yeah. And speaking of the amazing mid-card that we have, backstage, Kurt tells Kai and Tai, yes, Kai and Tai on SmackDown, he will be known henceforth as King Kurt. And they reply, King Kurt? And he says, yes, it's similar in your country to an emperor or a head ninja. Hardcore Holly interrupts and says, they're not stupid, they're Japanese. Which I feel like someone needs to cut out and use as a reply on Twitter. Hardcore Holly goes to leave this lovely discussion, kicks Kurt's crown across the room and says, well, if you don't like that, how about I kick your ass? Owen, how do you like me now? And in the ring, Kurt says, I don't make fun of you, Hardcore Holly, for dyeing what's left of your hair. Oof. Or the fact that you couldn't afford an orthodontist as a child, so now you have sticky outy teeth. You're just like these peasants in Hartford, Connecticut. Do you know how hard it is to find a crown repair shop around here? And again, despite all this, crowd is still applauding Kurt. Just having the audacity to say these things.
He can do no wrong.
Hardcore gets a very fake sounding crowd pop. Again, I've no idea what's up with the audio here. It's not really usually that noticeable, but it just feels very off this time. But it doesn't matter. This match is sadly known for only one pop. It's nothing to do with the crowd. Before then, Hardcore Holly takes his get clothesline by the ring post outside bump, which I now love, because I've gotten all about. He also gets the drop kick, so it's already a 5-star match. Holly gets 2 off a jackhammer suplex, and Lawler tells Cole off for saying jackhammer when Vince isn't here. This match goes a long 10 minutes, which is nice to see. And we get the moment, people even remember this match happened. Kurt Angle hitting the first moonsault of his entire career, and also one of his worst. Hardcore Holly was a substantial distance away from him, so Kurt ends up accidentally landing all knees onto his left arm. But Hardcore eats a lot of eggs, and so he refuses to take the 1-2-3 count straight away, continues to wrestle as this arm is dangling off him, like it's a small child in one of those little backpacks you get. He just continues to do his thing, but it's just hanging there. Including taking a low blow from Angle when the referee's distracted and taking the Angle slam, landing on it. Angle gets the pin, and that would be it for poor Holly for quite a few months. Tom, what are your thoughts on this?
This comes from IGN at the time. They say
IGN?
IGN wow. Reported this back in 2000. I know, right? They had a wrestling division at that point.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Hardcore Holly suffered a broken arm during his match against Kurt Angle at Tuesday's SmackDown tapings. According to WWF, the break occurred when Kurt Angle hit a moonsault during the match. Despite the injury, Holly continued to wrestle and finish the match. He will undergo surgery to repair the break tomorrow, when doctors will make a 3-inch incision and insert a titanium plate and screws into his forearm. The prognosis for Hardcore's return to the ring is about 10 weeks, although Holly is determined to make it back in 6. He is mental. So by the time this match aired, Holly had already had the operation and was on the road to recovery. Because this was aired on this was recorded on the Tuesday and aired on the Thursday. I remember the landing. Now, you said it was the worst moonsault Angle ever hit. It was awful in the sense that it broke a guy's arm, but I've got to say, we can say this because Holly ended up all right in the end. 10 on 10 for form. I thought he looked great up in the air. Just didn't quite land. Just bad on the landing.
Yes, he had to settle for the bronze. You're right.
He had to settle for the bronze. But yeah, this was... It's when you look back on this, like, it just seems like bravado. It sounds really bad. It seems like bravado from Holly to gut on through it. When really, you could have just signed off on the match and nobody would have thought any less of you. But this sort of hard man image, this persona that he's carved for himself, he had to prove like how hard and tough he is. So therefore, he carries on wrestling the match for several more minutes with an arm, like you say, just hanging there like it's plasticine. It's very unsettling. I can imagine that this is the much nicer cut that they used for the taping. But imagine watching it live and just seeing Holly in agony with the arm hanging out of the socket, continuing to attempt to wrestle.
You're right. And sadly, this wouldn't be the last time Holly would be involved in something like that. He would have had that famous match with RVD on ECW and Sci-Fi, where he got a massive gash on his back.
Oh, jeez.
And would continue to wrestle just because he's Hardcore Holly. How do you like me now? I like you a lot, hardcore. Stop doing that to yourself.
I noticed that we're meant to like him a lot since he was the voice of reason backstage. And it says something when Holly is the voice of reason, going, they're not stupid, they're Japanese. We're referring to Kai and Tai. Like, when Holly's the voice of reason, that's a problem. You may have noticed in that bit backstage, by the way, that ass was bleeped out, which is
I did notice that. Well, it's almost as if there's some sort of censoring.
Exactly. Due to pressure from the sponsors, the language on this episode of SmackDown is quietly being toned down. Words that used to be commonplace on the show without anyone batting an eye, like ass, ho, and slut, are either bleeped or no longer allowed to be used.
My God.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that won't mean anything on this episode, Tom. I think you're just being silly.
I don't think there's any reason to worry about that sort of thing.
No foreshadowing here.
No.
Meanwhile, Edge and Christian go to see Mick Foley. The Acolytes are, of course, the number one contenders. The tag title. Wait, what? 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 who? What? The Acolytes? But, okay, well, that isn't expanded upon later on, and I didn't bother to check Google, so I'll just let you know that, yes, apparently they are the number one contenders, the tag titles. Foley hears them, and he knows that Edge and Christian do not want to challenge them. So Mick Foley says that's not a problem. Instead, you guys can take on Kane and Undertaker tonight in singles matches. And they both go, Edge versus Undertaker. As if that'd work on SmackDown.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Great.
That wacky
this is
Foley.
A great moment, isn't it?
It is. RC Maximum Vroom Vroom Edge Cola presents Vince McMahon trying to reconcile with The Rock. Guess how it goes.
Does it go really
That's right,
well?
A manly
best
hug.
Friends.
Exactly. A manly hug and understanding of power dynamics and company representations is presented to you by RC Maximum Meow Car Noise Edge Cola. Stephanie McMahon then heads to the ring by herself and explains that she simply cannot believe she was born here. And there's real mega heat from the crowd here, none of that fake stuff. Triple H didn't lose the title last week, Vince did. Triple H is strong and virile, and she's been having sex with him. Mick Foley shows up and is very over, and reminds her it was this arena where Stephanie's virile husband retired him. Ah, no way out 2000. But look at him now. With a new aerodynamic haircut, Foley can do whatever he wants to Triple H's career. And Foley doesn't feel anywhere near bad because Triple H brought it amongst himself. Because if Triple H hadn't retired him, Linda would have had to reinstate him as the commissioner, and he'd be able to do stuff to Triple H. Oh, so actually some good logic there by Mick Foley. Foley mentions the name of the city for a cheap pop to SmackDown debut of that. He then says, as the commish, I grant your wish. So Triple H gets Jericho tonight. Steffi's rather pleased and shakes hands with Mick Foley in a six-man tag team match with X-Pac and the Road Dogg versus the Dudleys. Yay! It's a nice segment with Foley being very over and getting to end a segment with, God, I love the commissionary position. Which sounds like something you wrote for him, Tom, so well done there.
Can't confirm or deny that that might have been from my playbook.
This is a great start little next segment. Week, Scott, like, it certainly is. And I like, you know what I like about this, Tom, before you start speaking? It means that they get to freshen up the evil Vince is evil every week formula that we've been having for quite some time this year, while still getting some little segments with people talking, filling up time, getting pops, and sounding cool.
I was trying to place my finger on why this particular episode of SmackDown felt so fresh. And it is exactly as you said there. It is the lack of heel faction is evil stuff. It is we don't have these long segments with the McMahon Helmsleys at the beginning of the show. We don't have Triple H going, hey, we're going to try and divide and conquer. Lol, we beat you all up at the end. We don't have any of that. And it's amazing how the removal of one element of this show has immediately freshened things up. Mick Foley as commissioner, I remember when I was 16 and I first saw this, it was the best. I was so excited. Mick Foley with a haircut looked really weird at first, but it was... What I loved here was, and Mick Foley gushes about this time period in his book, like he loved doing the Commissioner Foley stuff, because he brought something new to it. Nobody had done this role like Mick Foley had before, like the commissioner of the company. Like obviously we've had managers and presidents and GMs and all this stuff, but it still felt quite new. We had Commissioner Shawn Michaels, but he didn't do a massive lot. He turned up on the Tron every so often and booked Paul Bearer in matches. But with this is like a hands-on commissioner, and everything about him, from the way that he looked, from the little elements of his character that he changed up, to the offices in different parts of the venue each week. Like, the part of the fun was seeing what his office was going to look like that week. You could just tell he was having the most fun in this role. And I think he was perfect in this role. Like, he was used the right amount. I didn't find him overbearing. And I felt like him in segments with Edge and Christian, and him in segments with, like, later on down the road, like Kai and Tai and Steve Blackman and people like that, I think it enhanced their stock to be in amongst the conversation with a legend like Mick Foley, who at that point was already a legend. I think it enhanced their stock. And I'm really excited to get my teeth into this particular part of the year 2000. I'm really glad that we do this podcast, because we're just on our sister podcast, the Cultaholic Classic Raw Review, announcement coming next this Saturday from there, as we talked about at the start. But we are stepping into the weeks in the run-up to WrestleMania 11. And from there, it is just a turgid year where the company completely lost its way. Can't get anything heated up. It was just a rough old year for the WWF, and it shows with the programming. Contrast this to this podcast, where we are about to enter this period, which, with outside of the Attitude Era, 98 time, is the best time for the WWF. Like, this summer period is incredible. Like, you've got new stars popping up everywhere. You've got new talent pushing their way through. You have a mix-up of great characters and big matches. Everything feels fresh and exciting. And, oh, my God, mate, in a couple of weeks' time, we get to do a watch-along of Fully Loaded 2000. The best pay-per-view of this whole freaking year. It's such a good time for wrestling. Such a good time.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. It's... What I like about it, compare and contrast with, maybe not 2020, because that's a bit harsh given everything that's happened, but anyway, 2019, they've had a change. The bad guys, the same thing that's happened every episode of SmackDown for most of the year 2000 has changed, and now we have Foley doing things. So there's variety. The bad guys get their comeuppance. It's not like they win every single time, and it's also not the good guys win all the time. It's give and take. Now they're getting a respite. And we'll see why that reason is for later on, but I don't want to spoil it. And it's, yeah, you're right. Everything's working well. People are getting over thanks to Foley rather than him going, hey, how dare you speak to me, Mick Foley McMahon, he was just being voted, you know, the one trendsetter of women in wrestling, or whatever, some crap, whatever's happened in 2020. You know, it's just Foley being Foley right here on the Cultaholic SmackDown review.
Yay!
Yeah. And you know what? Speaking of that cracking mid-card getting over, would you believe it? Up next, The Godfather takes on the one man gang. Singles, Bull Buchanan.
Bull Buchanan is a one man gang, to be fair.
Yeah, because no one else will join him. But wait, before the match starts, there's a noise playing. Oh, sorry, that must be me. My fire alarm must be got. Oh, no. Oh, no. No, 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 no. Stevie Richards comes out, shirt, trousers, and a tie. Nice little haircut. Godfather says, Stevie Richards, what are you doing in shirts and trousers? That's mental. And he goes, Stephen Richards, please. Monday Night Raw, Stephen saved millions of kids from seeing Terry Runnels' breasts. Crowd boos. Stephen has taken it upon himself to censor what he deems unacceptable, to do what most people would do if they had morals, which this company clearly does not have. Wow. Stop promoting women of the night and sexualizing them, Godfather. And this distracts him long enough for Bull to get an attack, and Stephen doesn't do anything else this episode. But yes, ladies and gentlemen, for those who endured it during it in 2000, this is the SmackDown debut of the Right to Censor gimmick. And as you've been no doubt following us every week, we have been noticing not just the fact that the PTC, the Parents Television Council, are costing WWF and somewhat inadvertently WCW money with advertisers and sponsorships, because they're saying, hey, are you sure this is for kids? What, this table spot, this bit where Tori got put through a table and she's injured, that's for kids? Or the, you know, Terry Runnels versus Cat match with Jerry Lawler taking a Bronco Buster and then maturing grinning, that's for children, is it? And so WF turned around and went, you know what? We're going to turn this into an angle. The most spiteful, deplorable angle you've ever seen to make fun of the PTC. And they've done a wonderful job of summing up why exactly the PTC would complain about them by having Stephen go, that's right, I made sure Terry Runnels didn't bare her breast so children wouldn't see it. Yep, that's a good point, actually, Stephen. Thank you. Well done, you. boo. So, Tom, I said a lot of things there. What did you think?
So, this is great. Stephen Richards here, just immediately making that, everything from the siren to his look just makes him stand out. This is the beginning of a really cool faction. Like, but it's not meant to be cool, but you know what I mean. Stephen Richards talked about
this. It's funnier in hindsight.
Oh, it's even better in hindsight. But a couple of years back, Stephen Richards was chatting to Slam Wrestling and he talked about this. And he said that he was really behind, like he'd heard about the gimmick. He knew there was something in the works. He was really behind it. Never knew he was actually going to be a part of it until the day. So he turned up at a Raw taping in Worcester, Massachusetts, which I believe was the one just before this. So the night that he debuted, he turned up and he said, I thought I was working Metal, which is the WWF sort of show underneath. He said, quote, they came to me and told me, do you want to cut your hair? I was kind of shocked. I was scared because I've had my hair. It's an ego thing for a long time. I said I cut my hair because every time I took a big chance, it paid off. Thank God it paid off this time. This is the biggest payoff of anything in my career since the BWO. And I'm making a lot more money this time, he said at the time. And that was it. That was how it was born. Like, they had this idea for a faction, but didn't tell Stephen Richards what he was going to be doing until he got to the venue that day and went, oh, by the way, we've got this gimmick for you. Do you want to try it? And from that, it became a thing. And fair play to him. Stephen Richards, he absolutely rolled with the punches and magic happened.
Well, you know what? I dislike this group at the time because I didn't quite understand what's going on. I'm probably going to enjoy it a lot more the second time round, given the fact that you look at WF, and at the time, I'm like, no, PTC did nothing wrong. PTC are the bad guys, even. PTC are this. Now I'm like, no, PTC were completely justified. WF, there's a lot to answer for. Anyway, during this, Bill Buchanan gets an amazing, almost PWG-esque bit to start this off by skinning the cat into the ring and attacking Godfather. And a lovely bit of athleticism that goes completely unnoticed by everybody, apart from Cole, and who cares. Bull then flies up to the top rope and clotheslines Godfather. Again, no one cares about the wonderful athleticism of Bull. Bull gets dumped outside and shoves a woman down. Godfather is distracted by this hoe in distress, in theory. So Bull finishes with a scissors kick, in theory, and then everyone moves on. Apart from that finish, what did you think of this, Tom?
The match is inconsequential. It's all about the debut of Stephen Richards. Match was just there. It's the beginning of a downward slide for the Godfather, which who knows where that will lead.
Yes.
And the upswing of Bull Buchanan continues as well. What a guy.
Yeah. It's funny that I'm wondering if we get the segment where they explain why they did what they did, because were they just blown away by Stephen's promo this week? They went, yeah, you know what? You're right. Anyway, breaking news, Holly's arm. It's in a local medical facility and he'll return in November. So
his arm is in a medical facility, not his whole body.
That's right. Half of his arm is in one place and the other is... No, it sounds really harsh, you know. I love Hardcore Holly. He'll be back in November time. Which is probably why I don't remember his How Do You Like Me Now theme being around this time, because he made his debut last week and then he's already off. So fun fact there for the music hounds. But now we get Kane versus Christian. Kane is presented by Twix, which presents Fully Loaded. Tom, just out of interest, because we're talking about the weird dietary habits of the people called the holics sometimes, how do you eat your Twix?
Well, you eat a Twix. What you do is unpack, you remove one of the fingers, mm-hmm. you bite along the top, so you eat the caramelly bit on the top. Quite chewy. You sacrifice a goat to the Antichrist, then you eat the biscuity bit along the bottom, and then rinse and repeat with the second.
Right.
Yeah.
That was about as strange as I was expecting.
Because
I was expecting though for you to say you put both in at the same time and bite them, but something weird or.
No. Very simple. Very simple. Take one out, chewy caramel bit along the top, sacrifice a goat to the Antichrist. Mm. Biscuity bit after the biscuity bit, always nice to go last. Eat the biscuity bit last, and then you do the same with the second one.
Huh.
Simples.
That's absolutely normal.
Yeah, perfectly normal.
Well done, Tom.
Thanks, mate.
You're learning. Christian tries to sneak attack with Edge distracting Kane. It doesn't work. And I wonder what Edge was saying to Kane to distract him. Well, Edge. Linda loves Gladiator. So I got her, the star of the show, to appear at the next appearance. Oh, what, you've got Russell Crowe to appear? No, I've got Shadow.
It's not even Wolf. It's not even Jet.
Well, he's not the WF title champion, man. So. On this salary and this economy... And then Shadow shows up, he's like, all right, hello, Linda, do you have any Coke? And she's like, no, they stopped advertising us thanks to the PTC. He's like, oh, darn it.
Linda! What is it, Kane, sweetie? There's somebody at work. There's somebody at work who's devoured a woman. It's like, what are you talking about, Kane? I heard them talking through the wall. He said he's Gladiator.
Jesus Christ.
Kane, sweetie, I want a divorce. Oh, Spaghettios.
No, Kane looks at the camera and goes, Awooga.
He looks at the camera and goes, Hope. But we can't see him pulling a face. He pulls a Sid James face, but because he's wearing a mask, we can't see.
Yeah. He forgot he had a mask on. He goes, but Linda, how will we make this work? And he goes, it's very simple, Kane. You will go on my first whistle. I will go on the second whistle.
Kane was on the way home the other night, and as he was going home, there was a fruit and veg stall set up, and there was a young woman who was running it. And Kane was like, oh, I'd love to take some fruits home for my wife. And the woman goes, okay, well, what sort of fruits? Well, she likes big fruit, like big like cantaloupes. So, oh, would she like watermelons? Yeah, she'd like them. I said, okay, well, if you wait there, I've got some really nice ones out the back. I'll let you have a look and see whether you want them. Okay, I'll wait here. And then ring, phone rings. Hello, Kane speaking. Kane, it's your wife, Linda. You're late home. I'll be home in a minute. This woman's just showing me her watermelons. What? Uh-oh. Looks like I'm on the sofa again. What a misunderstanding. That's gotta be Kane.
Every week, that's gotta be Kane reaches new depths.
You spelled heights wrong.
Uh-oh.
What a mix-up. That could happen to anybody.
Yeah, so that's the discussion Kane has with Edge outside. Christian tries a sneak attack, doesn't work. Kane presses Christian over his head a few times, but Christian lands that pesky crossbody of death he's been doing for 20 years. But eventually Kane accidentally hits the ref. Uh-oh, Spaghetti-O.
What an unfortunate circumstance.
And he was about to have tea with the vicar at 6. Oh, no.
He was 3 days from retirement.
And even worse. What's that, Kane? My souffle hasn't risen yet. Eddie Christian tried to double team him, but they're about to get a double choke slam. But a monster pop can mean Taz. Of all people, shows up to hit Kane with a chair a few times, and Christian wins a concerto, which is so good looking that they cut to a different camera angle so you can barely see it. And Christian gets the win on Kane. Be trouble for him when he gets home. But never mind that. Taz returns after being away for a bit with his new orange office shirt look. Like he's the assistant clerk in hell. And that was that match, I guess.
Okay.
Think of the match and also Taz's attire?
Taz very much looks like a bin man. I thought that was the look that he was going for.
Oh, no.
Fine. Bit Duke Drosy. The thing that stood out to me was you said he won with a concerto, but it's not called a concerto yet. Michael Cole describes this move, which we know as a concerto, as, quote, a Kane sandwich with the chairs as the bread. Verbatim, Michael Cole. A Kane sandwich with the chairs as the bread. It completely takes away any aggression from that move where you describe it as a Kane sandwich with the chairs as the bread. Kane, sweetie, what's wrong with these sandwiches?
Michael Cole said to use chairs as the bread.
Well, I don't think he meant it at home, sweetie, because I want a divorce.
I was looking at her melons.
Linda. Kane, honey, where are you? No, come into the garage, Linda. Linda, in the garage.
Cole.
In the garage. All right, I'm coming. Where are you?
I'm on the workbench, Linda.
Are you, like, invisible and you're going to, like, do something? No. flip the sandwich over. I'm Sandwich Kane, Linda!
Did somebody say just eat?
Kane, that's a jingle from 20 years in the future.
I know.
I'm going to put you in the bin. What? No, Linda, don't do that. You know what? I won't do that. Oh, good. I'll have Taz, the bin man from hell, put you in the bin.
The bin man? That's not a bad gimmick.
No, no, Taz. Eat me if you can. Survive if I let you.
Eat me if you can.
Do they call you the bin man because you could fit in a bin?
The pastor.
No, I know why they call you that. The pasta rage!
The pasta rage!
I know. First name bin, surname pushed.
Bin pushed. First name never. Oh. Starring alongside Drew Barrymore in Never Been Pushed.
Bins don't cry. Oh, God.
Oh, that's gotta be Kane.
That's gotta be Kane.
Do you think Test feels a bit like that?
Just at the very end of that, just appears, it's Test!
That's gotta be Kane. It's Test!
And this segues into backstage. Angie Christian, they're so motivated now. They had no idea that they could beat they could beat Kane. That's mental. Edge can surely beat Undertaker now. And this segues straight into the match. Undertaker and his "You've done it now" theme are here, which I'd like to point out to the podcast listeners. Ross nearly forgot about this week when he was asked his favorite Undertaker theme, and he was very upset when he realized that he'd forgotten it. But never mind that. Undertaker is brought to you by Castrol, presents the best of WWF SummerSlam. And I thought I'd check out what this actually on this video, because I've never seen it before. It covers the best of SummerSlam between 95 and 99. We have the ladder match between Shawn and Razor, Undertaker Mankind Ballroom Brawl, the steel cage match between Mankind and Triple H, Rock versus Hunter ladder match at 98. And then Shane versus Test from 99. That is a hell of a tape.
It's a good tape.
But
that,
the best thing about it, it certainly is, but the best thing about it, Tom, is the sheer amount of Castrol GTX on the front cover. Not only is the name featured twice, but there's a bottle of it posing with the wrestlers like it's people.
That's all that Castrol GTX wanted to do was have a photo with The Rock. Even Castrol GTX wants a photo with The Rock at this point.
Absolutely. There's just not enough money to throw at the WWF right now. Even things that aren't people want to wrestle with The Rock. Yeah, I've got two words for you. Stick me in your car. Castrol GTX.
Why is it that Undertaker is sponsored by Castrol GTX and Kane is sponsored by Twix?
Well, I know which one I'd rather eat.
Castrol GTX.
That was horrible. Sorry. Castrol GTX. Put it in your bike, not your mouth. Anyway, Undertaker no-sells everything because he's wearing blue jeans. Edge gets cocky and hits Undertaker with a chair, then uses it to air Sabu in the corner. And then Undertaker no-sells everything like he's in Here Comes the Pain for PS2. And wins the chokeslam. A very sensible match. And yes, Edge uses the chair in this match quite a bit as well. And Cole is emphasising that these are perhaps the chairman of WWF.
That's better than a Kane sandwich with chairs as the bread or whatever he said earlier.
Yeah. You are almost a Kane sandwich.
Well, there was a bit from this that you didn't go into, which I think is quite significant, which is after the match... Where
I was about to, but go ahead.
Oh, go for it.
Now you do a much better job. Go on.
I was only going to say that after the match, Edge and Christian are trying to attack Undertaker. Out comes Kane. The Brothers of Destruction fight them off. Kane lands a chokeslam. What does the Undertaker do, Math?
Wait, does a chokeslam because he's the Undertaker? Oh, no, no. It's the new Undertaker. He doesn't do a chokeslam. He has a new move. A sort of elevated powerbomb. Doesn't have a name yet, but it is cool the way he gets him on his shoulders and puts him up a bit more for a big old powerbomb.
The as yet unnamed last ride is birthed here. Edge, one of the first people to take the last ride. See, as part of making wrestling a bit nicer in the fallout of the PTC turning advertisers against them, pile drivers have also been outlawed. Even the Undertaker's tombstone pile driver is off the menu. So he needed something new. And this is what they came up with. They needed something that was going to have a similar effect in terms of like power and energy, and big F off powerbomb was the solution. Great powerbomb for as long as he can do it.
You know what? I forgot about that, Tom. Thank you. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, that was why they changed it, because no one's allowed to powerbomb anymore.
Oh.
True story.
Fantastic. plus, they'd be hitting double choke slams for about 20 years after this anyway, so it's fine. They'd go back to how things used to be. Speaking of things going back to used to be, Al Snow, is backstage chilling and talking to himself because no one wants to listen to him when Mick Foley appears in a little concession stand, winds down the winders, whatever they're called, and Mick Foley appears to make fun of Al Snow. Because what else is he going to do? Mick says, it's all right, Al. It's all right, Al. I'm here to reward you. You've been a good friend and all this. And he starts drinking a Pepsi on camera. And Al says, what do you mean? I'm going to get a match with The Rock for the WWF title. Foley splurts Pepsi all over him, laughing, and says, no, I meant that Crash Holly guy for the hardcore title. Oh, Al.
Bantz.
That's got to be Al. It's nice, though, there's a throwback to Al Snow hating The Rock.
They keep that ticking over.
Took
quite
his
cool.
best friend from him. Yeah. It's nice, those who say every week, it's nice, the little chronological stuff there. It's almost like Lord of the Rings with remembering stuff from months and months ago. Not like watching wrestling nowadays where they forget everything that happened last week.
Very true.
And to show that we've reverting back to the olden days, Al has gone back to the head theme. Well, looks like Steve Blackman won't be making an appearance then. Crash Holly heads to the ring, but would you believe it, Al has hidden underneath it. However, Crash Holly is so smart, he knows he's there. Sadly, he's also small, so Snow immediately grabs him and reverse powerbombs him on the ramp. And after the move, they both slide down awkwardly. Because I guess the position they're in, they're just like, this naturally go backwards. Even when Al gets time on TV, he finds a way to make a putz of himself. Crash tries running into the crowd. Al gets him, then dumps an entire thing of popcorn all over him, which the crowd loves. And Lawler very seriously says, careful, a popcorn kernel can take your eye out. Lots of weapons get used, crowd isn't into all of them, until Al puts on a bowling shirt and rolls a bowling ball directly into Crash Holly's testicles. Crowd really enjoyed that. Sometimes this gets used and you almost forget about it as soon as it's happened, but there are times when you're really milking it, like putting on an actual bowling shirt to do the move. That really gets the crowd into the build and hype, so I like this moment here. And then Al finds a way to ruin it. Al attempts to hold the ring steps above his head and run towards Crash, and the idea is Crash hits them with a chair, and then he falls backwards with them on top of them, like we've seen Kane lose to X-Pac at least once on TV. But the bump was done so bad that, like, Al Snow has the ring steps above him. And I guess he can't see, so he puts them down a bit. Then Crash hits him. And then Al Snow's like, oh, that was the bump. And then he falls backwards.
Oh, it was just messy.
And you can still hear the crowd laughing to this day. Crash thinks sod it and goes to leave. But then Steve Blackman, the other half of Head Cheese, attacks Crash with nunchucks and pins him to become the new champ. Presumably, Al Snow is still in the ring, buried like the Wicked Witch of the East, but we don't see him again because I think they tried to avoid him and that bump. And I was sad that Head Cheese weren't a thing anymore, but This now means we have Steve Blackman as hardcore champion. Yes! Happy memories of this run.
This is the beginning of and a brave new time.
It certainly is. But before we get Tom's thoughts, immediately we go backstage. The Mean Street Posse, of all people, show up to sneak attack Blackman. But he is, of course, a ninja, which, as remember earlier, Tom, that's a king in Japan. And he takes them all out and even offers to fight the referee as well before driving off in his car like Billy Big Bollocks. Tom, what did you think?
The Blackman era has begun. I'm so excited. So delighted to have Steve Blackman as your boy in the hardcore division. This was really, again, this was another thing that made this show seem quite fresh, where we've had so many, like, so much to do with the hardcore championship. But this is new. Steve Blackman, and it's new in a good way. Not like Gerald Briscoe and Pat Patterson fighting for it in an evening gown match. This feels like a step in a really exciting direction. Like, Blackman, over the next few weeks and months, is going to bring a new energy to this championship. And in return, this championship is going to give new energy to Steve Blackman. This is the closest Steve Blackman will ever truly become to being a household name in wrestling. We're on the verge of something great here, Matt.
Absolutely, Tom. Yeah, don't take our word for it. I have to wait and see what happens next week. But what we learned from this is Steve Blackman is awesome. And Al Snow hasn't been on TV for weeks, finally gets an opportunity to do something, and completely blows it. Rather like the last time he was on TV with Head Cheese at WrestleMania. Thanks, Al. Recap from Raw, where Vince reads a list of all the things Linda has done to annoy him, like reinstate The Undertaker, Mick Foley, and yes, even Earl Hebner, to keep that little storyline ticking. But after getting pinned by The Rock, Vince had an epiphany. Linda could only be doing these things to Vince for one reason. She loves him, and she must want a new baby. Well, don't worry, Linda. The genetic jackhammer is coming home. And happy Vince walks off to go F his wife. And that's how they write Vince off for a bit and replace him with Foley as a matchmaker.
You need Fan-effing-tastic. To write off Vince McMahon by leaving to become a genetic jackhammer.
Yes. So, BRB, having sex with my wife.
What? Who's doing it with Linda? That goes against our subplot.
Yeah. Hi, honey, has Kane been preempted like a dog show?
Oh, I imagine that'll be a season finale, wouldn't it? That'd be,
Linda, I'm back. That woman showed me her belly. Linda!
Executive producer, Matthew Gregg.
Yes.
As the soap theme tune plays.
Kane, all I'll say is, Kane didn't screw Linda. Vince screwed Linda.
I screwed Linda.
Kane leaves sobbing. Oh, season finale.
But all he had to do was like shake his head back and forth because he's wearing a mask, so he can't tell. I'm crying. Boo hoo hoo.
Cry.
I did a big cry.
Right Guard Extreme Sports sponsors Jericho, costing Triple H's title shot. I don't like that plug. I miss the days of lugs for your feet.
Yeah, they the good old days of SmackDown now, podcast. Which is a shame.
I can't wear Right Guard. Anyway. We get reminded that Tori sustained a separated shoulder at King of the Ring and she'd be out until October, where according to Wikipedia, she'd make a very brief appearance at WWF New York, which, aka WWF Limbo, for most talent involved with the company.
Pretty much.
And yeah, and that would be it until she came back as the Ninja with Raven, which was a very successful bit that Raven absolutely loved doing. Woohoo. So, of course, the story of that is, at King of the Ring, she took a top rope powerbomb from Bubba Dudley because, again, violence against women is okay, kids. PTC did nothing wrong. And apparently you were saying when we did the King of the Ring show that she was injured going into it, but she still took it like a champ.
Yeah, she'd had an injury going into it, but was still like, no, I'm fine, I'll take the bump. I'll do it, I'll get up there. Put me in, coach, I'm ready to play. It's a fair play to her.
Yeah, that is amazing. Considering she wasn't used much after this, it's a bit harsh. I don't know what happened to her. Tori WWF. Did you mean Wilson? No, the other one. Well, whatever. That's boring. It's main event time. And it's the Dudley Boyz and Chris Jericho versus DX. D-Von gets worked over because, of course, until the hot dog... The hot dog to Bubba. Bring it. To Bubba, who cleans house, and even Triple H sells for Bubba. Hebner holds Triple H back while the Duds nail their headbutt to the balls to X-Pac, then Road Dogg. And then when Triple H is finally unleashed by the referee, he gets punched down by Jericho. Triple H recovers to knock the table over at ringside, saying, no, table's bad. The fans are like, boo, we want to see women get put through tables. And Triple H is like, no, that's actually a bad thing. You should need to get over that. That's a very bad... Women get put through tables. And then Bubba... is the dude getting worked over, as Triple H says. No, actually, guys, violence against women is actually a very negative thing. You shouldn't be influenced by that. There's actually a magnificent bit here with X-Pac getting ready to do the Bronco Buster, and he's really hyping up, like, now I'm going to hit the Bronco Buster. Yay, yay. Along with Lawless yelling, I-ho, Silver, away, as he hits the Bronco Buster. This generates giant X-Pac sucks chants, maybe the loudest thing on the show so far. Triple H applies a sleeper, and this really gets the crowd into it to come alive for this, so Bubba is able to power out, nail Triple H with the Bubba Cutter. So, coincidentally, which was Triple H's first finisher before he settled on the pedigree, and Bubba cutters him. Jericho gets tagged in. He cleans house, Winnipeg style. Jericho ducks X-Pac, who accidentally hits Triple H off the apron. Triple H dunks him outside, so that he's hit the 3D! No, they don't, silly commentators. That's the backwards 3D neckbreaker thing that didn't have a name but would often confuse people like JR. They set up the 3D for real, but X-Pac grabs Bubba's foot, so Bubba gets pedigreed for the three. However, Bubba recovers instantly. Ah, God, I'm sorry, I'm struggling with words today. Bubba recovers instantly and pushes Triple H outside the ring and gets ready to awesome bomb Stephanie over the ropes to the outside to her certain death. But X-Pac saves her life. Triple H is on the apron to make sure it doesn't happen. So instead, Jericho decides to springboard dropkick the game off the apron, through the table, to end the show on a very high note. And that's your lot. Tom, what do you think of this lovely main event?
Good main event. Like, action-packed stuff. And I'm excited about where we're going, obviously. And I'm excited watching this. The fact that Jericho and Triple H is now in the mix. Because it's that feeling again that this is a fresh show. This feels like something that's new. And Triple H feuding with something other than The Rock is exciting. And it feels like it's a good step for Jericho. We'll see how it plays out. But I love the ending with Jericho pushing Triple H, drop-kicking Triple H to the table. It was a strong ending to SmackDown this week. A strong end to a great SmackDown this week. This was a bloody good show this week.
It certainly was. And the thing in the background and the foreground, especially in the main event, was Triple H... doing everything to sell for Jericho. I mean, he is... I think people listening to this for a while now know how much... how well Jericho and Triple H got along at the start of it. It wasn't a match made in heaven, to say the least. But now Triple H has turned a corner on this. What with the title change that didn't happen. The build-up with Stephanie versus Jericho almost becoming a thing that's giving it heat. And now Triple H is all about making Jericho look strong. Now he's more than willing to sell for him. He's willing to get through a table by him. He's going to Foley demanding he get his match. And he's all right with not getting the match straight away. He's selling for him. He's making him look great. It's, wow. What a change in perspective there from Triple H.
It's like he's paying his dues, brother.
Yeah, you can work now. Oh, goody, does that mean you're going to drop the title to me? What's your favourite wrestling promotion in Japan? Oh, I see where this is going.
Say it, Jericho.
Say Big Japan Pro Wrestling, I love it. No. All right. No, that's the spirit. He ruffles his hair like he's a small child.
What did you remember about this week's episode of SmackDown?
Bloody hell, everything.
Yeah.
I mean, where do I even begin? Holly's arm break, Foley's commissioner debut and his new look, the Jericho Triple H feud, the Kane Christian Edge Undertaker thing, Bin Man Taz. Yeah, all of it, mate.
All memorable. Was there something on there that you forgot happened?
I forgot this is the episode where Blackman wins the title. It was a nice way to end that match, but he'd have much more impressive matches later on. Just him being him, being Steve Blackman and beating everybody up.
I forgot.
But apart from that, this is one of the rare episodes where I loved everything. So what about you, mate?
I forgot the commissionary position line. Such a great line, and it totally slipped my mind that he even said it.
Yeah, and Tom went, yoink.
I'll use that and pretend it's my own. Belter of an episode of SmackDown this week. Next week is the last episode of the Cultaholic Classic SmackDown review for 2020. We're going to go out with a bang next week. Big announcement on what we'll be replacing it between the round Crimbo Limbo coming up very, very soon. Talk more about that in a bit. But until then, he is at Matthew Gregg on Twitter. I am at Tom Campbell on Twitter. Together, we are at Cultaholic on Twitter. Don't forget to join us. The PTZ did nothing wrong. Love you. Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.